Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! How are you? I hope you're well. It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Jeremy Cobb, but Boss Gentenar calls me Jimothy. I hope I said your name correctly. Yeah, Jimothy.
Jimothy.
Present.
That is...
I hope I said your name correctly, Boz or Bass. I apologize, but thank you for the nickname.
As you may have noticed, we are Yunati short today. She is having a very, very well-deserved break. She's had a very busy time, and so it is me and Jeremy here. But do not worry, as there is another Black Halfling in the room with us today. We are so excited to introduce our guest for today. She is a TTRPG extraordinaire, streamer, podcaster, actor, co-host of the Horror Movie Survival Guide and our Black History podcast, and of course, the Mrs. Claus to Jeremy Cobb's Mr. Claus.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Gamble is here. Thank you for joining us, Terry.
Oh my God, this is literally a dream come true. I am in love with all of you. So happy to be here. Just like, y'all are just so fun, smart, cool. I don't even know how I got invited to the Cool Kids Club, but thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh my God!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof.
Makes them even more black.
Cake glitches and bitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No.
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now. Like... I like, even through like people's ears, they heard me blushing then, like, fully.
I remain unable to blush, but yes. If I was able to blush, they might have been able to hear me as well.
So yeah, Terry, you are like our first ever like at like proper black halfling. Like we are three black halflings
you're a
right
black
now.
Halfling. You're the
you're a black halfling.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So, I mean, how does that feel?
I'm just telling you, like I said, it really is a dream come true. It feels great. It feels good. I'm, you know, happy to be a part of this whole fam. And oh my God, what a time. What a time.
You're in the fam now. Obviously, we had the delight of meeting Terry during a For the Queen game that we did on Roll20, over on Roll20. But it was a Santa Claus version. And it was.
For the Claus.
For the Claus, yeah. It was. The most delightful chaos I think I've ever been a part of. It was truly wild.
Hot, hot, beautiful mess. It was super wild. I had no idea what to expect. And then it really, this Christmas was kind of strange going into the holidays with like lockdown holiday. It was very weird. But to have that be kind of the kickoff, it put me in the Christmas spirit and like the mood to actually celebrate a little bit and pull out the decorations and get dressed up. I was ready after that game. Oh my goodness.
It was absolutely wild. So yeah, if you haven't checked that out, definitely do. Yeah. I think it's still available
on YouTube.
Roll 20. And on YouTube.
Yeah, if you go to Roll 20 YouTube, it's a real hoot and a half.
It really is. But we are so happy that you've joined us today, Terry. We always like to start by asking our guests a little bit about origin stories. Just like, how you got into TTRPGs and podcasting. Obviously, you're an actor, as a lot of us tend to be. But yeah, where did it like begin for you, I guess?
Oh my gosh. I got into roleplay gaming as like almost like a midlife crisis almost, I guess. I don't know. at almost like 35 years old, one of my dear friends, David Krennan, who's an amazing GM. His handle is kind of like America's DM. He actually runs a company called Dungeon in a Box that makes like gaming modules and has blown up over the last couple of years, actually, especially during this crazy time when people need great ideas and inspiration for their home games. He's got the perfect setup. It's basically kind of like similar to Loot Crate, but you get like a module every month and minis and all kinds of stuff. But he was he was my first DM. Was dating one of my really great friends, actually my other podcast co-host, Julia, for Horror Movie Survival Guide. And he got me into playing because I asked. I was like, hey, I've never played. It's like one of those things as a kid, like it was, you know, my family's very religious. Listen to you, Jeremy, talk about like not knowing like secular music. I was like, yeah. Like checks out. Remember that. you know, like gotta just only listen to mostly Jesus music. And which is also crazy.
Every move I make, I'm making you. Was that part of your
like,
era?
You want to hook up with Jesus, you know, music? Like, that's what I thought. Like, you know, those songs that were like, are we dating? Are Jesus and I dating?
I literally just had a conversation about this recently. There's a song, I don't know if you've heard this one, Terry, but there's a song where the chorus is, I want to sit at your feet, drink from the cup in your hand, lay back against you and breathe. Feel your heartbeat. This love is so deep. It's more than I can stand. I melt in your peace. It's overwhelming. That is the most.
Sorry, did you?
It's like slow jam lyrics.
Was one of those lines, your love is so deep?
Yes, it was.
Sweet Lord.
Exactly. Sweet Lord Jesus.
Exactly.
We're dating.
Wow. We are
dating.
Very sweet, so, evidently.
Yeah. Woo.
Dating. Yes. He needs to be putting a ring on my finger for that.
Yeah. Like, no, we are though, because the church is the bride of Christ. So it all checks out.
It all checks out.
This is all foreplay, baby, for the eventual marriage supper of the Lamb consummation.
So yeah, so growing up with that, like I was like not encouraged to play D&D. It was like of the devil. So like, and I got older, I was like, wait, like, I don't believe that. No. So as an adult, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you embraced the chaos of TTRPGs. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so I played with David and then like Amy Vorpal, who's like an amazing player.
Oh, yeah.
She was in my first table. Like she was part of the like I didn't know who I was playing with. Do you know what I mean though? Like I was at this table with like literally some of like icons of roleplay gaming and I had no idea. I was just like, these are the people I get to hang out with. These are my friends' friends. And that's who I played my first D&D campaign with.
I am like a huge fan of Amy Vorpal. I love Dungeon Run, and the DM had to step away for a little bit because he was getting an operation. And Amy came in and did like this Feywild setting with them, and it was so good. Like my first introduction to the Feywild, I was like, "Damn, she's amazing!
She's so smart and so talented." And I honestly did not know what I had, and I've just been. I feel like ever so lucky since, like just to be keep playing with like the most amazing players. So, and then to move on and like be like, Abrea runs games for me for 2.5 years. You know what I mean? Though, like playing like with her, and so it's I just got lucky. Yeah. I swear, that's what it was. It's just like meeting the right people at the right time.
This is like my mom years ago was. I'm from Cincinnati. She was, I think she, one of her students, because she used to teach school, took her to like the Bengals stadium. And she was in this picture with some guy. And she showed the picture to my dad. And my dad was like, do you know who this is? And she was like, it's some footballer. And it's Dan Marino standing there with like this big grin on his face and his arm around my mom. Just like, because you can tell he knows that she has no idea who she is.
Like, not a clue.
And he's standing here, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Just like, ha ha. That's fully you in TTRPGs. You're just hopping in there like, yeah, you're just some friends of my friends. I'm just playing around.
Yeah. Well, it was
got a table
also
Dan Marino's.
Well, it's also because like I was hanging out with some actor people too, because there was some D&D movie. I can't even tell you the name now, but there were some people who had done a movie and they'd all played like a D&D theme. And that's what it was like. It was because of the acting connection too. That's how we ended up all hanging out together. And then I also ended up playing with why am I blanking your last name? Wes. He runs 12 Sided Stories. And so that's also an actual play podcast. And we played a bunch of Call of Cthulhu and Wes Otis. And so and he's an amazing. He's been literally like he's one of those people who's been like DMing for like almost 40 years or something crazy. You know what I mean, though? And has like, yeah. So it's like a lifetime of D&D behind him. And these are and Call of Cthulhu and all these other games. And so I literally learn from like people who have just brought me in and who are masters of the craft. So
I have such huge respect for people who have played D&D for that long, because I got really interested because someone mentioned it offhand, like about how clunky like second edition or whatever it is rules were. And I looked it up and was like, geez.
Yeah, I've just been so lucky though that even the people who have been around a long time have all really been story driven artists or story driven game masters, and you know, and really have relied more on that. And a lot of the stuff I've gotten to play has mostly been on stream. I don't play as many home games as I would like, honestly. And so the fact that we've been so driven by story just to make sure the narrative is strong for audiences. I've played on Happy Jacks. I played on Saving Throw. And with you all, obviously, getting to tell a story and do improv is like my jam. So I also do that as well. So like, when people ask me about it, I'm like, that's kind of been my way in, is like, oh, it's just storytelling with your friends. And it's like a longest improv game for a few hours, yeah. You know, yeah. It's long form.
Yeah. I think that's the way in. It seems like two very clear ways in of like, I was like a core, just like fantasy nerd, and I just need to ingest as much of it as possible. And then D&D gives them like a way of then like having agency and creating. Or there is, I think, absolutely, again, for me, I was definitely a fantasy nerd, but for me, the creative storytelling as like a group, like I don't think you can have much more fun with some of your best friends. It feels pure and lovely. So I was today was listening to the first episode of Our Black History, and I just want to say at the top, I was like genuinely nearly in tears listening to this. If you haven't checked it out, like please do. The first episode has Terry and her brother talking to their mum about her experiences of being a black woman and talking about Martin Luther King, and it is, wow, it is seriously powerful, Terry. I was like genuinely moved, and I could tell you guys by the end of the episode, you guys were like, whoa, boy, I need to sit down.
We had to debrief that. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, it was, I really can't recommend it highly enough. And I just thought, with you coming on the show and listening to that, like it'd be so great to talk to you about just, I guess, the impact of, especially like the last year on TTRPG, like the community, you know, the impact of last year was the reason we started the show. And like, just what's it been like, I guess, like what, again, there was the inspiration for you creating that show and like, you know, Our Black History, and how has the last year molded that?
Oh my gosh, so much. Ugh.
Sorry, there was a question in there somewhere.
I'm like taking notes.
Respond to whichever part
you want to. Yeah.
There is a lot. It was a lot. This whole last year, obviously a lifetime. I think it was a culmination of a lifetime of experiences, and I'm sure you guys can relate to that too. Of just, there's all these ways we've had to preserve ourselves in so many spaces, and all of a sudden the weight of that felt like it was lifted for a moment of feeling like, oh, everyone else is now in on, like, we've been literally like in a war zone this whole time, and now everyone sees this war zone, the veil has been lifted, so to speak. I think the impetus, kind of like for you probably too, is like, I want to take advantage of what I call this opening, because whenever there's a great opening and a great awakening, there's often a pushback, and there's going to be a backlash, and there's going to be a shutdown at some point again of people forgetting. So I just wanted to make sure, like, during this time, while people have their eyes and ears are open, to actually like, okay, while you're listening, I want to make sure I can impart something to you in this time.
Yeah.
And make sure I can share something with you so that you can maybe carry that nugget, even if it shrinks a little bit, something maybe will still stay with you to keep forwarding the cause, keep forwarding us as humans, as, you know, as humanity. So I actually, in the midst of like all the uprisings of last year, post George Floyd, I wrote like an article that blew up a little bit on Medium as well too, just about my experiences, because I grew up in San Diego, in a very predominantly white area of the world. And so I felt like I had like insider information, you know, on how people act or think they're acting when they think someone's not listening who, you know, is taking in that information differently, and how, like, we have to operate in a way that we have to be adept in their language, so to speak, and our own, and navigate the world so we can be safe, you know? And so my article was kind of just about that, of like, hey, like, you guys have shown yourselves over and over again and you didn't realize it. I'm going to let you know these are times you might have shown yourself and where you might have been in the wrong, where racism is very real. And kind of the bookend that was like this, you know, Capitol riots in America and all the stuff that happened at the beginning of the year here. I was talking with my mom on the phone, and it was like, you know, right before Martin Luther King weekend and all that stuff too, and his birthday and celebration. And she and I were talking. I was like, Mom, this conversation is a podcast. I was like, do you want to do it? And she was like, oh, sure, if it'll help people. I was like, okay, of course.
Being an and she, like, is incredible. Like, yeah. She brings the A game. She just fully parks you to, you know, you an experienced podcaster. She's like, just stay over there, Terry, okay? I'm about to drop some truth right now. And it's beautiful. Like, it really is a beautiful, like, interview. She's so eloquent. And, like, there was story arcs in there. I was, like, getting to the midpoint. I was tearing up. And then she brought it home and made me feel empowered. It was, yeah, it's brilliant.
Right? She's always been so talented as a speaker. I think back in the day, I remember, like, she had confessed to me, like, many moons ago, because we both were obsessed with Oprah, you know, growing up. And she was like, I think she wanted to be a journalist. Like, she didn't really talk about that on the show, but I remember her talking about that. So she's got that, like, inside that just intuitively knows how to, like, bring that kind of stuff home. And my brother, used to be head of the California Psychology Association and is an amazing, talented psychologist in his own right. So that's why I grabbed him. I was like, Dr. Gamble, like, you have to join me in this conversation. He's like, all right. He just wanted to be there too, just to hear whatever she had to say. But it was like the bookend to, like I said, that conversation of, like, people thinking it was a far off thing, or like racism is over. Cause, like, you know, the whole Barack Obama, racism's dead. Like, we don't have that anymore. We got a black president. It's like, no.
Yeah.
What happened was
Barack Obama killed racism.
He just came in there and was like, you're out. See ya.
Like, he planted the stake of the American flag through the heart of the racism vampire.
Racism. And it disappeared, never to be seen again.
Yeah. Oh my God, I want to see this comic. Oh my gosh.
Barack
just, like...
Van Helsing or whatever.
Barack Hussein Helsing.
Yes.
Barack Helsing Obama.
Oh man. It's great. Yeah. It's so, I just, that, you know, people were really did think that though. Like you know, the illusion of that was just so much. And I, you know, I don't know, depending on where you are in the country, I've had the privilege of getting to drive across this great country of ours, across from sea to shining sea. And I've gone over to the pond too, you know, and seen around the world. And no, racism is still pretty alive, no matter where you go.
It's here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, that is very much a still very, very common mentality among a lot of people. Because last year, I had shared like one or two things on Facebook talking about like experiences that I had as a black person. And this other, a white person that I had known from church years ago, shared a status that was, I forget what it was. I think it was about that thing that got huge on Facebook where this black man had killed a little white boy or white child. And he was like, he was an escaped convict or something, or he had some real issues and had killed this little boy. And all these people were like, why aren't people rioting and looting for this little boy? You know, he was kidding. And it was like, what? And so I commented trying to be like, well, it's because this guy was immediately prosecuted. Everyone knows that this was wrong. Nobody's arguing that the child deserved it. These are different circumstances. And this person, like, that's all I said, really. And this person started messaging me privately being like, how dare you start complaining about all this racism stuff? All you ever post about is racism, but I never see you post about child trafficking. And on this whole thing about how America's not racist, but child trafficking is a much bigger issue. And I was like, what are you talking
about? She got cute because that's the QAnon. I mean, that's the thing. And that's the thing. That's the craziest thing about the whole white supremacy movement, especially at this juncture, is to frame white people as victims. and to frame this whole child trafficking thing and to like try to reframe it so that they think that what is worse, what's worse than racism, children being abused, right? And yeah, so like it's kind of that like whataboutism that's pervasive right now, and that's it's really gross. Of just like there are a lot of things that are wrong. I'm going to call all of that wrong. I'm not saying one's worse than the other. I'm going to say that's all bad stuff.
It's
can
all
we get
bad,
rid of
yeah.
all the bad stuff? Like I'm not even going to fight you on that. Like let's just get rid of all the bad things. Like I'm not even
this may come as a shock to you. I'm not going to push back on child trafficking. Do you know what I mean? There's not going to be any.
That was what I said to her. I was like, the reason that I post stuff about racism is not only that it pertains to me directly, but also like. I hear a lot of people deny racism. I've never met someone who's like, child trafficking, nah, it's fine. If somebody did argue that child trafficking was okay, I probably would share some stuff. Say, like, well, actually.
Absolutely. I will
highlight a few things. I definitely have to highlight a few things.
Yeah.
I'll fight it. So, yeah. So, anyway. Just letting them know that it's present, and also that all the bad stuff that they read about in their history books or like Martin Luther King was also not that long ago. Like my mom was like alive during this time, and like Martin Luther King being younger than Betty White, who we like vilify. I'm like Anne Frank, same age as Martin Luther King, like also would still be alive right now if their lives weren't cut short by all the bullshit, you know? Like
I honestly, that was something I felt like over the last year I've had this like visceral reaction many times, but very much the same as you, because I grew up in a very white community. There's been multiple times, especially over the last year, where I've kind of gone like I've like bumped into like, oh holy shit, this is a lot closer to me, and I'm now starting to understand why I've always felt so fucking angry about stuff and how my white friends just didn't get why I was angry. And to be honest, I didn't get it either, like because I didn't understand what generational trauma was. Like I didn't understand that I was dealing with this baggage, do you know what I mean? Like whilst because I kind of thought like, you know, it was a separation thing and all of my white friends and the way I was taught was like, oh, this was all ages ago. And again, like listening to your show, I was suddenly and listening to the fact that like your mom went to like a Negro school and like and I was honestly just and the story about your dad taking off his uniform when he came home because otherwise people would throw food at him. I like even now that chokes me up. That just it just seems unbelievable to me. And I think one of the things that has been so like tough and really and so great about the last year is the fact that it's allowing people to process this kind of old emotion. Do you know what I mean? These like old buried things that we've, I think as a minority and like black people have tried to go like, okay, if you want to ignore it, maybe we can too, and we can all just get the fuck over it. And it'll, do you know what I mean? And I think that we realize now, like, that's just, it's not going to go away. The pain and the anger that we feel is not going to just disappear. You know, we have to process it, and you have to process it with us. Do you know what I mean? You have to, like, live in the shame for a minute and stop trying to deny this thing and just realize it happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Haven't dealt with it. That's the thing. And everyone's just like, oh, I think we've dealt with this. Like, no, we actually haven't dealt with this. We're still dealing with like the fallout, the aftermath, and you know, the kids that have been raised by it, the legislators who are legislating with it still.
Yeah.
That was the thing that really kind of one of my takeaways from my mom too, was just like, she's like, these are the guys that are in power right now. They went to the same schools as me. Do you know what I mean? Though it's like, these are or they were in school the same era that she was. Like, these are the same age as like all these, you know, people in power. And that's what they're swimming in, you know, even if they don't acknowledge it or are not aware of it. Like, they're in that same water of like, oh, wait, I can't see how short-sighted I am with some of these, you know, decisions we're making.
Yeah, like I used to think Negro schools and separation and segregation was okay as a child. Like the idea now that you would just be that, like without seriously confronting that, you would be removed completely as if by magic from that point of view or from that idealism is wild. It's completely and utterly untrue. It wouldn't it's not possible.
Yeah, you know? You have to, if you've been trained in that way, you have to untrain it somehow, and you have to actively do it. You can't just passively let go of something like that. That's the thing.
And I think for a lot of people, and this is why I'm always very like kind of you know, willing to talk to people about it. Because I think for a lot of white people, there is like a real sense of shame, which I don't think they necessarily want to come up against, because they go, oh, that wasn't me. So like, I don't know, I don't want to feel bad for something that I didn't do. And like, I get that from like a survival point of view. But I think from a, like a trying to help your fellow man kind of thing, it's something you just got to deal with, you know, you've just got to deal with it.
It's like I always say, you can't sit in the pot for 20 plus years and not come out tasting like soup.
100%. Yes. Like, that's exactly it. Like, we're all swimming in it. Like, I even joke about that. Not joke, but, like, I'm like, I'm just as racist sometimes. Like, I grew up in, like, the, like, backwoods, basically, so to speak, of San Diego. Like, there was, you know, it's own brand of craziness. Tom Metzger, who was one of the Grand Dragons of the KKK, was, like, 20 minutes from where I grew up. Yeah, that's my lifetime. This is in the 80s. Like, this is when I'm a kid hanging out. That like... We didn't go out
in
to Fallbrook.
San Diego, of all places.
Yeah. So it's one of California's got more hate groups than a lot of the South, like especially even Orange County, California is actually worse than a lot of areas of the South as far as per capita white nationalist and hate groups. My brother lived in Orange County for like 20 years and people would leave like banana peels on his front porch just for fun. So it's not like, that's why I said people think it's far away. That's why I was like, okay, I have my mom. This is who the story is. My grandfather worked at Cotton Gin and like lived in Texas. You know what I mean? Though, like, these are the stories I grew up hearing from him of like having to ride a horse places and like what that was like in that part of Texas. Anyway, it all still lives with me. Like you said, that generational thing and realizing like I was like hated that trope of, you know, the angry black woman. I was like, I guess I am. Like, I really am angry.
Yeah.
It's okay. And being and trying to fight that so much, I was like, there's a reason that's a stereotype. And there is a reason I'm angry, though. Like, let's like acknowledge that. Like, yes.
Yeah. 100%. Absolutely. And one of the things that I found particularly interesting, actually, and I one of the reasons why I kind of I love the fact we found such an audience in America. Part of it is I think that in America there is a conversation happening. Like, it is tough having this conversation in the UK. Like, I had it was a couple weeks after the murder of George Floyd, and I was like, do you know what? Fuck this. I'm not going to be quiet anymore. I'm not going to just like let stuff slide. And so if I see something or whatever, I'm going to engage with it, even if it's tough or whatever it is. It was like definitely the wrong move for me in terms of my emotional state. But like, I feel like I managed to tell some family members that they needed to not do that and say that stuff. And I remember pushing back. My grandma had posted this like thing about Winston Churchill and how disgusting it was that people had defaced the statue. And I didn't post like, hey, it's fine to vandalize stuff. Like, that's not what I said. I said, like, we should probably acknowledge the fact that Winston Churchill he committed genocide on multiple occasions. You know, really, really quite racist. And a lot of the legacy that we're dealing with in the UK is a direct response to what he imposed post-war. Mm-hmm. And like, my family just went like in on me. And it was horrendous. It was like a real moment of like, oh, I don't know where I come from anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it was a real moment of like of feeling pretty lost and hurt and like upset. And it was a tough thing. And I suddenly went, man, we just can't have this conversation in the UK. Like, we're really, really convinced that we don't have racism over here. Like, really convinced. And I think it's because it's not as stark. You know what I mean? Like, we don't see black people getting shot because, you know, our policemen don't carry guns.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. But that's the only, honestly, that's the only reason. I was literally saying to someone, the only difference between here and America is the fact that they have guns in America. Like, if you look at the you know, imprisonment, the sort of per capita imprisonment rates, it's just as bad, if not worse, for people of color. You know, it's just like a harder conversation to have.
Yeah, it's like, different. It's different. Well, there's like the classism and caste system, and there's a whole other layer, I feel like, as well, too, within the UK.
Absolutely.
Also here, too, but it needs to be addressed in that way as well. And I think there's just some a weird sense of gratitude. I think UK people, y'all got over there, like I know we yell USA a lot over here, which is just silly, but like y'all have a very different sense of like gratitude to the crown. That is like a whole nother thing of like loving that imperialism and that colonialism.
My like new thing is I'm like, never say colonialism around me in a positive way or you are going to get some clap back. I am done with us saying the word colonialism like it's something to be friggin' proud of. We done fucked up half the world with just being terrible people. Terrible, awful people, which has built the wealth of this nation. Stop being proud of it and let's start fixing it. Like, honestly, I could... Anyway, this is not a show about...
I was about to say, I got two stories lined up. I can jump in with them.
Oh my God, I want to hear. Oh my God.
Fine, I'll drop them. The first one was during the Black Lives Matter protests. I was protesting not in central London, but in Sidcup, because it was like a bunch of people from my drama school wanted to do that because they were like, look, in central London, it's a lot more diverse. Out here in Sidcup, it's mostly white people and people, they don't get that here. They wouldn't understand it. So let's protest here so that people can see like, oh no, there are black people here. And, you know, we want to address these issues that exist here as well. And there were a lot of people who gave very positive responses, but one of the biggest negative responses that we got was like, this isn't America. Why are you doing that here? Like, you should be over in America. What are you doing? Like, they were offended that like we were saying that it was an issue here. Cause they're like, that's an American problem. It's not a British problem. So there's a, and I think throughout much of Europe, that's not just the UK, which technically isn't Europe anymore, but you know, throughout the European continent as well, I think there's a feeling among a lot of people that it just flat out doesn't exist. Yeah. And then the second story is it's a situation where I was doing like a workshop with a group of people that I'd worked with before, and they were all white. And there was like a friend of this company who had an immersive theater company that they were working with. And they had like, they made this really cool promotional video talking about how site-specific immersive theater can offer a better audience experience. And, you know, because now you're involved in the story and you get to help create the story yourself and, you know, all these different things. And made some strong points. And the show that they were putting on at the time was a show where the premise was that the Nazis had won World War II and had occupied Britain. And you were part of the resistance, part of the British resistance against the Nazi occupation. And I was like, okay, that sounds like a cool premise for a play. But here's the issue. If I go to this play, am I playing a white person? Because really, if we're going to follow through on this, I would not be part of any resistance because, Frank, I would have either been taken away or the resistance would be like, we'll keep you in hiding because I would be the first person that people would point at. Also, what about anybody with a physical disability, like any kind of visible disability going to this show? Are they just playing a person who isn't disabled? Because we all know what the Nazis did to disabled people. Or like a gay person or a Jewish person.
Jewish person.
Like,
yeah,
there's a long list of people who can't really be themselves in this scenario and for whom it's probably going to be a lot less immersive.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And that was what
more
I said.
Less enjoyable.
And,
like,
yeah,
you know what
and
I mean?
Everybody
if you are a
in the
Jewish
room,
person, I just don't know how much I'd, you know.
Every single one of these white people in this room went from being like, this is so cool, to be like, well, okay, you know, let's pump our brakes here. Like, it's just a glorified escape room, really. And I was like, whoa.
That's not
what this guy was just saying. This dude was making it out to be like this one of the most fulfilling theatrical experiences you could have. And they're all like, well, you know, like it's, and there, it was really interesting to see because they, in their own minds, could not understand where the issue there was. Like they didn't, I think what it comes down to is for a lot of white people, the idea of racist just basically means bad. It doesn't necessarily refer to a set of ideologies. I mean, maybe it does specifically, but connotatively, it means bad. And so if you or someone you like has some area of racism or even racial insensitivity or ignorance, that doesn't just mean that they've have a blind spot. It means that they are bad. And so the knee-jerk reaction is to be like, no, I'm not bad. My friend isn't bad. You can't say that my friend is bad. And that even results in moving the goalposts like they were, trying to suddenly downplay the entire point of this like 20-minute video this person had made. And it's like, okay. But I think that's one thing that really, that's one of the big blocks, I think, for people being able to move forward in the conversation. Is the idea of racist just meaning bad person?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's not a complex discussion.
It's a more nuanced concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, that's also like one of the things that, as far as all the stuff I've tried to approach too, it's really perspective. It's always just like, hey, I have a way I know of stepping outside of myself to look from another perspective because I've had to constantly my whole life, right? Just for safety, you think, you know, when you're in a space, you assess it. What would they think of this? I need to like, you know, adjust myself accordingly so that they feel safe in this space. Like white people historically have not had to really do that. They're like right. to that type of degree
yes.
and actually have to think about that from like, oh, if someone else were to walk in here, this is what they might experience. I didn't even think about that. I didn't think that, oh yeah, if I'm not white, this experience is very different in this quote unquote glorified escape room. Like, oh God.
Oh shit.
I did not. Oops. You know, it's just.
And the there is this like scrambling reaction to stuff like that where it does just become like a deer on ice. You're just like,
slow down.
It's okay. Like I'm not pointing the racism gun at you right now. Like it's chill. Just it's fine. Take a breath. You know, you get your feet underneath you. Let's just talk about this. Maybe we need to adjust this play slightly so there's not such a problematic subject matter. Maybe like,
or just write something in like, who would fit into one of those categories. The idea is that the resistance has gathered these people together and put them in a safe house. And they're still able to actively help as like the administration side. Like they help to make the big group decisions, even though they're not out in the field doing stuff. You write it in.
Yeah.
But like there was nothing like that indicated in the video. So
it just seems so wild then that instead of finding a solution, it becomes a scramble to justify previous previously what's been said. And I think, you know, this applies to broader things. And actually a lot of the discussions we have on this show about TTRPGs and the community that we kind of all are a part of, there is this opinion of like, we can't just rewrite D&D, even though it's all made up, because we will upset the people that don't want it rewritten, kind of. Do you know what I mean? Like, we would rather scramble around and work really, really, really hard to kind of retroactively justify something rather than just change it. Do you know what I mean?
It's like a reverence thing. And it just reminds me of like certain like church organizations too. That's what just popped in my head too, of like trying to retrofit stuff, being like, no. What had happened was like, we have a whole new way of looking at it and what it is, you know, and trying to justify like bad ideas. We can love these old things, but we can update stuff. I think it's okay. Like you said, it is all made up. Like even people's resistance to like having, you know, stuff that's like with disability, you know, as part of, you know, culture. You know, like
people do resist that. That one doesn't make any sense to me.
That's
why you would resist that in a fantasy game.
Like,
it's so wild.
Hello. It's Yeah, it's wild to me.
It's like I don't know if you've seen this news, but Zack Snyder is apparently doing a realistic or truthful telling of King Arthur's story. And I was like, so just like no Excalibur and Round Table and knights, because he was just like a regular king, probably of Wales.
That sounds so boring.
That sounds great, Zach.
The whole point is the fantasy stuff.
That's what I mean. So it's like, so no Merlin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or is Merlin just like a druid now?
Yeah.
Just like a dude, like a herb. Like he's just, it's just
they,
like a
they
dude
did make
with
that movie,
kit.
King Arthur. That was like that exact premise where he's like, he's a Samnite soldier left over from like the Romans or something? The Roman occupation? That was, yeah.
But I was just sort of, and like that's, I feel like the way that some people approach TTRPGs, it's just like they have this like warped vision that now like dragons are officially like a thing that actually happened, and we have to be truthful to them, more truthful to them than we do to actual real life cultures. Do you know what I mean? Like people would more vehemently protect dragons in this game than like Asian culture in this game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like the erasure of Asian culture in this game. Like it's, that is just like, it's me and Jeremy have discussed this many times. You are arguing from a different set of facts at that point.
Yeah.
Like, it's so hard to have the conversation that you are just not, we're not reading from the same book, let alone the same page. Do you know what I mean?
Not at all. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, Terry, have you in any of your games ever encountered any, not necessarily, maybe the public ones, but just in general, in any games, have you ever run into situations where you've had to, like, you've run into people with those blind spots that have manifested in the game, and you've had to maybe, like, adjust or, I guess, navigate those situations?
Thank goodness, no. Actually, I've had, like, a pretty great, solid group of people I've gamed with over these years, and... No, I haven't really had to come up across that. I've had my own questions. I remember, I think, like dipping in when I was first getting into like role play gaming, I was like, what's this whole race thing? Like, what is that? Like, what does that mean? And why is this language not great? I was like, when you're wondering why not more Black people are playing this right now, I was like, this might be why. Like some of the ways you get into it and some of the tropes and some of the way the characters are. I just played big orcs for like a long time anyway and just was like, whatever, I'm just going to come here and Hulk smash. That's like all I wanted to do when I started playing.
Yeah.
Now I like to be a little more nuanced with like the types of characters and things that I pick and stuff I'm working through, I guess. So I feel like we're all working stuff out, right? Like,
yeah,
is that
kind of
what we do it for? Like,
this is just therapy. Like, this whole show is just therapy. So.
Therapy with dice.
That's
literally
how I feel. So yeah, I feel like I've been, like I said, lucky for that. And a lot of the gaming systems, like the reasons we've chosen stuff or try to retrofit things to fit, have kind of been for those reasons too, like everything from playing like Fate to Call of Cthulhu to like Kids on Bikes or whatever, Tales from the Loop, all these different fun, different things. Thank goodness we've not encountered like a lot of problematic stuff at the table. And if we were, I would say something, you know, but I haven't had to, luckily.
Yeah. I think we are very fortunate in that, like, you know, if we mix with a lot of people in our industry generally tend to be quite sort of open-minded, and at least even if they have problematic views, you'd feel comfortable sort of being able to say, hey, that's not cool. You know, and now obviously there are examples of it, but I always feel like, you know, we've heard stories from through our Discord and through people just reaching out and talking to us about, you know, the experiences they've had. And it's like, it can be, I think when we talk about those like blind spots, like it's so, D&D can feel so personal. Like it's literally, like you said, it's like therapy. And like, I can't imagine being in a scenario where the therapist turns around and says something like kind of openly racist to me. Do you know what I mean? Like that's what I feel like the equivalent is. And like, I just think that's really like, that's a dangerous situation sort of thing to put yourself in mentally, I think. And that, and again, that's why I link a lot of people of color, people with disabilities or whatever, just don't feel like they can engage in this community. Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like if you were to get invested and then have it kind of ripped away from you, do you know what I mean? In that way, I don't know how you would, like, I don't know how I would process that.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of getting to a point where I'm like, okay, I'm starting to understand it, but like, you know, it was tough for me when we found out Lord of the Rings was racist. I was like, shit. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that's a real cornerstone of stuff for me. You know, that's a real cornerstone of a lot of my experiences and a lot
I
of
love my tour of the
imagined.
Shire, you guys, you know?
Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean? And so, like, until we really find a way to make that, to make this the space safe, so that it's, I've said this before, but the onus is not on the DM or the players to avoid the racist plot holes of the game. You know what I mean? Like that, like we should, the road should be smoother, not the car, like the person driving should be a better driver.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like that's kind of the issue that we're coming up against now. And then until that's sorted, I don't know if we're ever going to get the kind of numbers of people that we want to, you know what I mean? We're never going to get like a more even split of people who are engaging in this community. Mm. But you know, we'll keep trying.
I think it'll happen.
We'll keep plugging away.
We gotta have, you know, we'll have like, if we have like some more superstars, you know, like coming up in the ranks too. I don't know. Yeah. I get some visibility on the hobby, and
we got to get Michael B. Jordan in on this game.
That's what I'm talking about.
Honestly, we've got like this. You know, like genuinely. Sorry, this is so sidetrack. Michael B. Jordan said that he is. This is for a charity thing. He's genuinely doing this. He's opening an OnlyFans account for his mustache.
I'm gonna have to get on that. I would get on it.
Thing is, he has a sexy mustache. Like he has, like, and it's just gonna be pictures of his face, like, and just posing, and you know, I guess just with his mustache, like.
And all the proceeds go to charity. That's amazing.
But I was just like, hey man, you know what sells? Like Michael B. Jordan genuinely is the sexiest man alive, and I won't hear otherwise. Like he, I can't.
I'm not gonna fight you.
He blows my mind. Like I look, I'm like, wow, look at this. He is.
I got to go to a screening of Black Panther that he was at the Q&A through SAG when I, like, through the SAG Foundation when that was happening. And just
that's like the dream.
I was in the second row, y'all. It was like him, Lupita. Like, I was just like, I mean, like, so close. He was so close. It was, he's gorgeous. And yes.
We have this dream. We have this, basically have this dream of getting Michael B. Jordan, John Boyega, Lupita Nyong'o, like all playing a game with three black halflings. Like that's like the, that's like end goal stuff.
Honestly, I feel like they would be down. I know. I feel like Lupita would be super down.
Oh,
she's
hella
cool.
I feel like we could definitely get Lupita.
She's
for sure.
Hella
cool. She would be in Wagadu in a heartbeat.
100%.
Oh, that'd be the best. Like genuinely though, like we need to have you in Wagadu, because like if it's anything like For the Claws, we better strap in. Your character in For the Claws, I was honest, there was like at points where I was like, I know I need to like draw my card or talk right now, but I can't, because you were just fully reclining in your seat with this martini glass, and I just could not handle it. Like
Blitz,
I could not
was
handle
amazing.
It And then I was like, Blitzenbait is a reindeer. Like the whole time I was like, okay, translate what you're seeing to a reindeer. It was just so good.
That's the joy of RPGs, of like getting like a couple of suggestions, you know, for a thing, and then just like letting your imagination go. And that's just the golden moment of like, okay, this is the premise. These are like the couple of different things we've got. Like I just did a session zero yesterday for a game that we're going to be doing in March, and I'm so excited. And it's just like the joy of like, I am not. I'm excited to be role playing with some fabulous folks. I'll tell you about it soon. It'll be but we just you know, we're playing like an Agatha Christie inspired, like kind of like lies and alibis. But it's just funny.
Cool.
You go in there, it's a game where you just like you get a few different suggestions to help build your character, which so just I love it. I love a Can I get a suggestion, please? Yes, we're going to play this improv game. That's how it felt, and it was really fun. So I can't wait to unveil those soon.
We touched on this a couple times kind of already, and it was something that we'd spoken briefly about when we were talking about this episode, which was self-care. And I think having discussed some of the things we have about people being in those situations, I think especially when... because I think that a lot of people come to this community looking for like a safe space, you know what I mean, and it's not always the safest of spaces for a myriad of reasons, social media being like a big part of that, you know. So I think it would be cool to, and I wanted to throw over to you, Terry, just to, how do you look after yourself? Because it can be like, you know, with everything you're engaging in, you know, I could hear it in your voice when you were talking to your mom on the show about how, like, how much you have to combat, you know what I mean? Like, how do you take care of yourself in those moments? How do you keep yourself?
That's a really good question. Just think about that social media thing. And I've heard Onati talk about a lot about, like, just get off, like, take a break. And I'm like,
take a break when you need to.
And some of the other stuff you're talking about, a lot of things can be mitigated by just not interacting and engaging with certain parts of the conversation. So using that block button and when you need it, and, you know, filtering your feed when you need it, taking a moment. I think saying no was like the big lesson, I guess, of like 2020 as well, because all of a sudden I feel like, I don't know about you, but all of a sudden I got calls from people and like requests to be on things. And I was like, I had to kind of look to myself and look within myself and figure out, what was the purpose for what I was doing it? Is this something that's part of my grander mission that I said in my, for me, myself and my life? Is this the grander mission that I want to like help support? Will this help push the agenda forward? And sometimes you just have to choose, is it something I want to do because it's fun? And looking at all of those things, and I think making choices from that can be empowering and leads to less wear and tear. If you're doing something that you feel like you shouldn't be doing or don't feel like it's worth it, see if there's a way to get out of it.
Yeah, because expending energy, right, on those things where you just go like, I fully had that. That was like my New Year's resolution, was to say like, to say yes to less things, because I was suddenly like, yo, I literally work Monday to Friday, and then Saturdays I like edit and I do all this other stuff, and then like I get this like one day where I'm not doing anything, and I was just like, and I was like, okay, this is too much. I have to stop saying yes to stuff. I have to just be like, you know, and I think that's a tough place to be, especially if your friends are involved and your colleagues are involved, and it can be very hard to sort of say, like, I genuinely would enjoy that, but like right now, I need to just take a minute. I need to go and sit, have a whiskey in a dark room, and you know, like, do something for me. Listen to some jazz. Do you know what I mean?
There was a point last year where I was DMing, I think, three separate campaigns weekly, plus playing in another like three or four every week. And then a friend invited me to be in another game, and initially I was like, yeah, and then I looked at the schedule and I was like, I don't want to do this.
I can't. It's not gonna be fun for me if I do
this.
This
is not good. This needs to stop.
And the thing is, there's this like allusion to from like 2020 of like, well, everyone's just at home, so like, you know, like you have all this time.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, as my roommates always joke, they're like, you're still the busiest girl, even in quarantine. Like, you were busy before, and it's just like almost got worse because this perception that we were all just chilling. And I was like, no, I'm still not chilling. I still have a lot of things that are on my plate that I am really committed to. And so for me, it was just figuring out what was most important to me as far as those commitments and pushing through to those. And also saying no and taking those breaks when you need it.
I don't know if you get this, Terry. I feel like I quite often I've got so many plates spinning that I feel guilty then taking time off. Like, and like, if anyone is listening and is in that scenario, ask for help. Like, just say, if there is anyone else involved in any of those things that you're doing, just be like, hey, yo, I'm struggling with this thing. And just because like that burnout is like not fun. Like, when you get to that point where you're like, you finally get a day off, where you're kind of like, I could get away with not doing anything today. Like, just take it. Like, just go and do something so unrelated to anything that you do.
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel like that. I get that all the time.
100%. And just being honest, I think that's also part of it, is like, I know, like, I feel like I've grown up with the passive aggressive Olympics, you know, in our household. I'm just like, it's fine. Suffering inside. Like, it's fine.
Everybody just has internal screams all the time. They got these big grins, and inside is,
yeah, like, I can do it. I'm fine. I can absolutely do it. I'm so strong. And it's like, no, like, that's the one thing I feel like my mom, I didn't learn that from her. I learned to try to grin and bear and get through. I was like, mom, I'm just learning to like say no now. And like, that's okay. And I don't feel guilty about it if I'm not able to like be at everything. And also just communicating with your friends and family. If that does happen, asking for help, like you said, I think is so great. And just being like, hey, like, if something can be late, and if you need it to be, like, forgiving yourself for that. Like,
that's cool.
It's really, we make up the deadlines. Like, I always joke and say, it's all made up. Like, literally what we're doing right now, this is made up. How you're getting paid for that job, like, you made up that's what you deserve, and that's like what's going to happen for this job right now. Like, it's
so little need for this level of struggling. Like, we made a decision recently to stop streaming the Wagadu, our Wagadu sessions. We don't do them live anymore.
Yeah, so smart. You got to pre-tape it. Yeah.
Yeah, which was like, we were like, oh, but it's so, such a shame. We like having people there. But like, literally every single time we did these streams, I would be so stressed out that I would be in the middle of the stream trying to like literally run it and was like trying to juggle things. I wasn't focusing on what was happening. I didn't like, you know, and it was just, we sat there afterwards and was just like, why are we doing this? Like, Jeremy got to a point where he was just like trying to like write characters in and out within like a maybe a 2 hour session.
Because yeah, we were like, well, we got the guests for this specific day. They can't do any other days. We just gotta get them in and out.
Let's do it. Yeah,
it's hard to be present when you're pushing through like that. So like finding what actually is going to work for you, I think is super important.
I think, you know, when it comes to like playing D&D or anything like that, I tend to find myself thinking, like, I want to be able to enjoy this. You know what I mean? And like quite often if I'm DMing, I'm like, I don't want to arrive without like the notes. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to arrive without having done the work. And like, there's times where I'm like, guys, look, I don't want to DM right now because so much time and effort and emotion has gone into this. Like, I don't want to then ruin it by giving you guys something substandard kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, just throw in something in there that's just not what we're used to, you know?
Yeah. You have more control. And honestly, it's, you do it and you adjust and the audience will roll with you. Like, that's the, like, they're so forgiving. Like, I feel like I stressed about that once too, but like, oh my God, it has to be out at this time, this day. Like, this thing has got to be done this way. And like, and then I look and I'm like, who's downloading at that time? And if you look at metrics or whatever, like, literally it's for two people. Like, they, and those are like, those two people are my parents. Like, they don't
We're not friggin' Netflix. Do you know what I mean? We don't have to look at like when we're dropping an episode because it's gonna be the difference between millions of views.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And like all of like I was like, oh, you know, and we did the announcement and like just like no one said anything. They were just like, oh yeah, it's pretty cool.
That made me really laugh because the announcement
The
announcement was so appalling. Like, it was really funny because when we made the decision, we were all like, cool. And then when you made the announcement, I was like, oh man, he must have taken this hard because the announcement was like so sad. It's like, we've taken the difficult decision to no longer stream. Everybody was like, yeah, cool. All right, sounds good.
I'm finding out live that was Jeremy's opinion of the of that post.
I've never mentioned it before. I remember reading the post and be like, wow. Wow, okay. I didn't realize this was such a blow.
It was so agonizing for him because he felt the weight. That's the thing. That's the thing of like, and that, and I think that's the part of the self-care thing of like, no one cares about your stuff as much as you do. Like, that's like hands down. Like, I think remembering that.
Die for the show.
Like, yeah, because
we laugh,
it's so,
but that's a scary statement right there. we laugh, but that's, we need to talk about this later.
We need to have a conversation, bro. This is not self-care. This
three
is not
black
self-care.
Interventions.
We need to- we're stepping in. Oh my gosh. No, but that's the thing is like, we think it's so important and we get so caught up in our own little like worlds and we do think that things are that important. And they're not in the grand scheme of like, it's like, will someone, I always just ask myself too, it's like, will someone die if this is not done? Will someone, you know, like, is this messing with someone's livelihood? Is this messing with someone, you know what I mean? And any of those things, like if someone's still able to eat, someone's still able to like, you know, live their life with or without this, like it's not as important as we think it is.
Terry, I really wanted to ask, jumping back to the subject of D&D, how do, when you create your characters and do you DM at all?
I have DM'd like twice in my life.
Okay.
I would like to do more. Yeah.
Ooh,
talk to me.
Yes.
Okay.
You should come and guest DM. You should come and guest DM.
Yeah, we've never had a guest DM before.
Oh, God.
For one of our one shots. It can be for one of the one shots. If you wanted to do like a little fun one shot.
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
That's confirmed now, Terry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes. Hashtag confirmed Terry, new DM. New
Wagadu
DM.
I was going to say no to things, but I just said yes to that. Okay, fine. It's fine.
You couldn't resist this face. So the when you create characters, is the I guess, is your status as a racial minority yourself ever like a part of your thought process when creating those characters? To explain what I'm saying is, as I've said before, a pivotal moment for my D&D experience was when Lou Wilson on one of the adventuring party videos from Dimension 20 mentioned that all of his characters are black. And I was like, you're right. You can consider your characters black. And so that I create my next character, I'm like, he's going to be black. Is that ever a consideration for you in terms of how you approach your characters, creating characters, or even interacting with other races within game? Because as we've acknowledged earlier in this conversation, some of those, there's racism built into the world of D&D.
Yes, and yes. I do consider race, and I do think about that when I'm building my characters. I tend to just make them all kinds of different other colors, though. Like, I'm just like, okay, I'm playing a green character. I'm playing purple. Like, I don't know. But I do like to think about it in the scope of the game, because I feel like everyone else's default, for the most part, I play with a lot of not black people. I play with a lot of white people, a lot of, you know, because it's just, you know, our hobby seems to be full. And I always do try to make my character of color, just because that's easier for me to think about it from that perspective, I think. Every now and again, I played a handful of white characters, or what would we call historically white characters, but I'm like, we're all like not real. Like, it's like I'm playing an elf. You know what I mean? They're like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who cares? But I try to consciously, my characters that I think I play on stream, I do try to make sure that they are of color, just because I want that out there in the world, and I want more, and I want people to see that. As far as like helping build my stories, is that you're wondering about how they influence that, how that influenced the stories I make or the character arcs I think about, or
yeah, or even just the characterization, different aspects? Like, there's any number of ways that it could manifest. Like, I guess an example, in my character Dennis Colespring, who is like he's the black halfling, after which the show is sort of tangentially named. He comes from a tribe of monks called the Wu-Tang Clan, and all of them are named after like their fantasy versions of famous black music artists. Like, Dennis Colespring is, I think, the real name Dennis Cole of the Ghostwise Killa. And his girlfriend, well, his wannabe girlfriend is named Bill Bonse. And she's currently dating Blue Jay-Z. I have an owl pet named Snoop. Now, that's obviously like a very blatant, I'm going to make everything real black. But
I love that. No, I don't always go from that extreme. But I do try to have stuff that is derivative, or like sometimes that is like teaching moments. I think that comes just from my family, too. They're all teachers.
Teachable moments
of pieces of culture that people may or may not know about. But I love everything. All kinds of pop culture references is like my jam anyway. Clearly, as you might have noticed playing the game with me when we played For the Claws, I pull a lot of stuff from whatever's happening in life and in culture. I love that. I love Easter eggs in a game like that, where maybe not everybody gets it, but I know like if you're a black audience watching that, you may get a couple little things here and there.
I can honestly say, as a DM, there was nothing more rewarding than like I did like a lot of research on that era of music, and then was just trying to put in as many references to it as possible when we finally visited the Wu-Tang Clan, like the names of everyone, and like the main enemy they come up against is a giant called the Notorious B.I.G. Like, you know, that was quite fun.
Brilliant.
And I again, exactly the same as you. Like, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like if we get a bit too precious with D&D, like, it's just like slightly less fun. It just kind of becomes like a sim game, you know what I mean? Like a almost like Skyrim. And I'm like, we can have more fun, you know, with it than like a core, like, this is a world that is fantasy with magic. Do you know what I mean? It can be more fun, you know what I mean? You can incorporate any elements that you like and you enjoy. For sure. Well, this leads us on like really, really well to something we always get our guests to do, and I'm excited for this. We always do a thing called the Tale from the Table. This is basically where we ask our guest for a absolutely ridiculous, chaotic moment that just sticks out in their mind. Terry, is there a moment?
I'm probably going to have to throw it back to Salt Bay with Abria as our intrepid DM. And we did for our season finale, I think for season two, because we did about four seasons of that show, we did a musical episode. Yeah, that was like our audience had that was a stretch goal that we had done, you know, for the Patreon and for everyone who supports the show. And it was a hot, hot mess. But for me, because we had one person at the table, Nega Oryx, who did not want to. She's not a singer, like, at all. And so to, like, have that as our stretch, like, she was terrified. So, like, it was great. So anytime that, like, we had to, like, throw it to her, like, we teased the audience the whole episode of just, like we tried to send her a song. And it was like, it's not
going
to happen.
I'm really more of a dancer.
Yes. Yeah. So like they found a mechanic that ended up working out, I think, really well. Like where like there was like a love letter, basically, kind of a thing that happened with another one of the characters. And they ended up kind of singing their words and it just like worked out. But I think me having to sing song everything anyway for a whole like few hours. Yeah, that was.
Yeah,
that
was like whilst streaming.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? There's no safety net there.
Just making up stuff. It's a hot mess, but also another beautiful singing moment. I guess I like to sing on stream. I do. I don't mind it. Was playing. We did a Swords Fall. I got to play that with Abria again as well, too, over at Hyper RPG. And to have to rap.
Yo.
Yo, yo, yo.
Okay.
And like freestyle.
Oof.
Yeah. Like the,
that's confidence.
The pressure was on.
Yeah. The stakes have never been higher.
If that got thrown over to me, you would see me disappear from this Zoom so damn fast. I would be like, nope.
And you don't have to. Like, the nice thing about the mechanic of the game is like you can describe how you do it. But like we were playing it and like doing one, wanting to do like an actual play, like really give it a good example for people to check out the game too. Ooh. So we went for it. So like, some of it I think was more successful than others, but I like think we did all right. But to come in and have to like, because like basically you got to battle with other like, you know, masters of rap in like in different styles. So it was fun. Yeah.
Wow. Is that like a DM'd game? Is that like a?
It is. Yeah.
Who DM'd? Was it Abria that DM'd?
Yeah.
Wow.
She grabbed me.
I feel like that's impressive to DM. Like the idea of throwing any more elements in to like at me whilst I'm DMing is terrifying. I'm like, I am just getting through this. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, I have just about got enough
for dear life.
Brain capacity. You know what I mean? Like, I introduce four enemies in an encounter and my brain starts leaking out of my ears. I'm like, nah, there's so many moving parts. The idea of having to sing my way through that encounter? Holy shit. Like, that is one too many things, my friend. I am out.
We love an added element. Like, I think Abria and I both, like, that's why she's like my soul sister. Anything she's doing, if she calls me, I'm just like, yes, tell me whatever it is, like I will show up. But like, yeah, like her and I, like queen of like ADHD or whatever, just like we're just like another element, let's juggle, let's do it. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it in the game. Okay, great. We're making this up as we go along. Okay, great. Like the flop sweat is real, and like the joy of like, did we survive it? And like people ask me often too about game moments, and honestly, like I remember kind of like general stuff, but I literally feel like I go into like a weird lucid state. Like I'm played a game. I laughed so hard. I cried. I don't know what happened. Like, it was great. Like, that's like...
Do you know, honestly, that's one of my biggest issues as a DM is I get to the end of a session and I'm like, what the hell happened? What item did I give them? Where are they going? Oh, man. This isn't good.
You see me taking notes even as we're talking here, because I will like, I just want to make sure, like, even when I... my other podcast too, Horror Movie Survival Guide, like we take like pages of notes on the movies, and people listen to the show, they probably think we don't do anything.
It sounds
like we haven't prepped, but we literally are doing it from our notes and stuff too. And I take mad notes when I play games as well. Like I'm one of those people. I know there was some chatter recently on the Twitterverse about like, ooh, people have to use too many notes to call back. So I take all the notes I need.
Yeah.
Use them again.
Notes.
Yeah.
Terry, this has been so wonderful. I loved talking to you so much. That was like a genuinely, like a really insightful conversation. And just, I feel warm and like held having had that conversation. And
I've been gently cradling, for those of you who aren't watching, I've been gently cradling Jasper throughout this entire.
And Terry's been then cradling the two of us to get like together. Like, you
so
know.
I'm nursing them, you guys.
Whenever we weren't talking, that was all the times you heard me just go,
like my sweet babies.
Terry's face as soon as she said that was just you went nope. Like that was probably
it's a new thing, we're gonna try it for all future guests.
It's gonna get weird when we get Brennan back on.
Yeah,
but okay.
But, you know, sometimes,
honestly, like beautiful, listen, beautiful teats.
It's a real teatsing moment.
It is.
It's a real teatsing moment.
Teatsable moments. Yeah. Teatsable moments.
Teatsable moments.
Oh wow, it's
Ooh,
so funny.
Man.
One of the last podcasts I just guessed on with one of my friends was on Shakespeare, and I was about the role of the nurse, and that's been on my mind. You know, that's all. That's all. I mean, that's what I'm going to blame it on. I don't know.
Don't recall
I got nothing.
That happening in any of Shakespeare's plays.
Well, the nurse, that's
Romeo and Juliet would have looked very different.
She had
a
nurse. That's who raised her. The nurse lost her baby before she took care of Juliet. So she actually is more like Juliet's mom than Juliet's mom in the show. It's all good. I think that's a good place to not talk about this anymore.
Thank you so much for being the person to just go, yeah, do you know what? Hold on. We can stop there. Like, I normally have to get to this point, and I'm so bad at making the segues that I just, like, shoehorn them in. And then I see Jeremy on the Zoom just, like, trying to keep it in at how, like, he's laughing at now how bad the segue I made was. But I just knew we had to get off that subject. Otherwise, it was going to go down a really dark, like, down a dark path.
Yeah. Jasper is trying desperately to write. He's trying to, like, write the ship. I will usually grab the ship and try and turn it into whatever direction just presented itself as hard as possible.
Oh, yeah.
And Unati will usually just be along for the ride in the back, just,
Yeah, no hands. Way. Yeah.
I love it. I'm here to breathe the chaos this week with you. I love it. I love the chaos, and I see it. And I usually am like the chaos pirate. Like, I am ready to, like.
Yeah, we definitely got that in For the Claws. That was. It was truly, truly wild. That was, oh man. Go watch it if you haven't. Genuinely, give yourself that gift. Like, just go watch it. I'm pretty proud of that game.
And that was like, you know, 10 a.m. in the morning, I think, here. Like, I was like, I just rolled out of bed and was like, we're going to make something happen today.
Just there sipping a martini at 10 a.m. in the morning.
It was not a real, that's actually like one of the few games that I was not actually drinking any real alcohol. Like, that was like completely sober. That's why it's such a masterpiece. I was like, wow, I did that full sober without like an actual martini, just threw a few olives and some seltzer water and called it a day. And woo.
Terry.
Yes.
Most importantly, where can we find all of your stuff?
Oh, on the internet somewhere, you know, you just look it up. At the Terry Gamble. That's all my social medias. I'm Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Most of it's on there. You can find all the different things I do. I do a lot depending on the week. I have Horror Movie Survival Guide comes out every Monday. That does come out every Monday because we're almost 200 episodes in on that show. We've been doing it for a little while. So it's a good little backlog for those who've never heard it before. I started up as a producer. Then I started co-hosting around episode 70. So we just talk about scary movies each week. Spoiler heavy. So if it's a movie you want to see, don't listen to it. If it's a movie you want to pretend you've seen, listen to it. Right?
Nice.
For those
now who want to have a whole conversation about horror movies, but we can't.
We'll do it another time. You'll have to come on my show.
Next
How about that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Let's watch a movie and I will totally, I enjoy a good horror movie.
If
I can have an excuse to watch horror movies, I love them, but Jade literally cannot sit through a horror movie, so like I never get to watch them unless I'm like actually on my own, and then I'm like, yeah, but I'm a little bit too much of a chicken to actually watch it on my own. So like, you know, maybe we can come on and I'll make Jeremy watch it with me.
Yeah, I only ever watch them by myself because I know hardly any other people who are willing to watch them.
I'm willing to watch them just with someone else. That's the only thing, because I'm like, I will freak myself out otherwise.
Oh my gosh, I love
like,
it.
I will tell myself.
No, I love that. No, and that's what I love, because I was not like a big horror person. That's kind of the premise of the show, is like my friend Julia and one of her best girlfriends through university watched every single horror movie in the video VHS section, and they took notes and made a notebook. So it literally has like, they had a rating system and everything for the movies. So we kind of like took that notebook, and now we've opened up beyond the notebook since I've started co-hosting with her too. And building our own new notebook as well. So yeah, we talk about how to survive the movies and just fun stuff. We have interviews. We just interviewed Patton Oswalt, was on recently, and we had a really fun time with him. It's good stuff. And then I also, I'm on Salt Bay Adventures. We'll be back soon with Abria DMing. I don't know when, but soon. I'm excited. We have a whole fun Court of Thorns is the new campaign name. It's going to be, I think you guys are going to like it. It's going to be really fun.
I'm excited.
As far as like, it's like next level for us. I'm really, yes. Anyway, I'm stoked. And then on Friday nights for the next few months, I'm on a show called Heartbeats, where I play a doctor. It's a fully improvised medical drama, kind of like Grey's Anatomy, but if it was fully improvised, with audience suggestions on Twitch, on Ripley Improv on Friday nights, which is just a weird, wild, wonderful thing, where I play the doctor, head of cardiothoracic surgery. We're all heart doctors because it's Heartbeats. So there's lots of romance and intrigue in the hospital. Yeah, and then I'm also part of a sketch comedy group called Diversity Higher Comedy, and we put out sketches when we can. Usually, I think we have one-off Wednesdays, we call it. We also have a couple series we've been working on. So look at Diversity Higher Comedy. That says in higher up, Diversity Higher, or higher, depending on how you think about it. Cool. And I feel like there's stuff I'm missing. Oh, Our Black History. We just talked about that at the beginning, too. More episodes coming soon. We've been pulling some of those interviews. And like you talk about, sometimes you get to the end of the week and you got to edit. All you got to do is edit or take a day off.
Yep.
Sometimes you take a day off. So
take a day off. Yeah. I feel you.
So more of that's going to be coming soon. I'm really excited about that. Like I said, at the Terry Gamble or terrygamble.com for all the stuff.
Amazing. Well, if you listening at home are like us and are now absolutely obsessed with Terry and just her beautiful energy, go and find her everywhere and make sure you follow, because, it's a joy. And so, yeah, thank you so much, Terry, for joining us. Thank you for being an honorary the third Black Halfling in this episode. It's been so much fun to talk to you, and I cannot wait for you to join us in Wulgardu. It is going to be a blast, because that's going to happen.
Hell yes. Oh my gosh. I can't wait. I'm bringing everybody with me. I'm like one degree from Lupita. I had a friend who did a show with her. I'm like, I feel like if we like put in some calls, right? We all got a friend, right? We got to get her on.
Yeah, yeah, everyone's got a friend. Yeah.
Got to get them on.
Yeah. If you want to play like sisters with Lupita in Wulgardu.
Yo.
Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm
saying? Life-changing.
Like you come in as these like twins. Do you know what I mean? I feel like that could be, you know what I mean? That could be fun.
Goodness.
That could be fun.
Yes.
Yeah, that could be real good. Well, thank you so much for listening, everyone at home. Please go and check out Terry's stuff. And don't forget that you can follow us, if you don't already, at TB Halflings. You can also find us on our Patreon, which is how we fund the show. And there is a bunch of goodies on there for you, including loads more Wulgardu content and bonus episodes.
And you can suggest a nickname. If you would like to suggest a nickname for me, you can suggest a nickname on the Patreon.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, Terry, you should suggest a nickname. When we get off, you should select.
Oh, I'm doing it.
Yeah. So thank you so much for listening. And so long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.